We have been reading your book for several days, and we have also discussed in the book for five days in a row. So I guess we almost know by memory. It was very interesting, and we have great discussions and disagreements and agreements. You will see it. So we are excited. We'll begin with the first question, if you don't mind. The first question will be Brian.
Hi, Ms. Rubin. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. Okay, do you think it is necessary or appropriate for a woman to use her body to advance in an organization?
No. I mean, not if you mean sexually or seductively, but we are embodied creatures and are identified, women and men, first as women and men. So that sort of establishes the parameters for interaction. And as you probably know, I mean, open door policies and so on, they're all, so much of the workplace now is kind of a gender minefield. Just look at the lawsuits that are arising and the fears among women in the U.S. Armed Services. So it's one doesn't just, I think to use that expression, quote unquote, using one's body, it's kind of a minefield of issues. And so one does and doesn't use it, if that makes sense.
What do you think?
What do you think, Brian? What do you think?
That's a good question, because he was. That's the reason.
Yes.
That's the reason we call you.
I guess the discussion was, were we interpreting some of the things you wrote was I interpreting some of the things you wrote too literally or not? In terms of that.
Oh, I think what you mean is probably the section on, or at least one of the sections on how women in India have or other places have just used their femininity. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there, of course. I mean, I'm a big believer in that. And I think women still have very different ways of communicating that are essential to make the most of.
Sure.
Thank you. Sha, we have another question for you. Sha?
Good afternoon, Ms. Rubin.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Ms. Rubin, when you say rely on yourself for both your suffering and your triumph, is it not...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well. I don't know if you have a speakerphone there, but can you move a little closer to the audio device?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. When you say rely on yourself for both your suffering and for your triumph, is it not contradicting with your concept of master the mesh? And how can we win trust of other if we are so self-centered? Moreover, isn't it seems like a selfish approach?
When Dr. Marotte sent me this question, I didn't quite understand it. How do you see the contradiction?
When you say, for me, it's like more self-centered approach, and for creating a monster mesh, like it's like networking, right? Getting along with other people. If you're so much focused on yourself, then it's, for me, it seems difficult to get along other people. I mean, if you're so much focused for your own things, like for your own goals, then how can
Well, first of all, I think one of the major themes of The Princesa, and actually, even though I have titled this book to be a reflection of my reading of The Prince, Machiavelli's great work, which you've read, have you all read The Prince?
I just know a little bit that he also says, like, people, they are motivated by their own, like, desires. They also, yeah. Like, it's about that.
Yes, you're right. But the truth about the Princesa, which I did not really disclose in the book, is that my great guiding principle in writing this book was Mohandas Gandhi, whose notion of satyagraha is, I think, often loosely translated as peaceful conflict. So that you you instigate a set of changes that will result in greater harmony. And sometimes that instigation is can be a conflictual process. But so when you use the word selfish, I mean, Gandhi's great goal was to establish greater good and lesser suffering. And so I think that that is what I've tried to make clear, at least that part in the Princesa, which is that anything you win for yourself, if it is to be valued over the long term being your life, it has to also include the good of others. You cannot just benefit yourself and see others continue to suffer or to have less, because that will ultimately have an impact on your own enjoyment of whatever gains you make. So I don't see selfishness as being part of it, in fact, just the opposite.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Rubin.
You're very welcome.
We have Hasima now with a question.
Okay.
Hello, Ms. Rubin, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Actually, I have a very interesting question in my mind. I just read your book, and I appreciate the unconventional ideas that you just preach about the women. And I was wondering that if you are just given a chance to rewrite the book, so what portion of the book you would like to, you know, delete or add?
Yeah, well, you know, so far these questions have been fascinating, and this one, the one you ask is especially fascinating. You know, when I wrote The Princesa, I thought strategy was the most brilliant method for success, for achieving success. Mm-hmm. That if you had a goal in mind, all you had to do was articulate that goal and then almost work backwards, step by step, for how to achieve it, mm-hmm. how to achieve the goal, meaning whom do you meet? What do you do? Where do you go? How do you ask for what you want? I thought that, I thought if you knew those things, you really didn't need anything else.
Okay.
But I have since found, or life has taught me, that strategy is a good vocabulary, a great means for achievement, but it is extremely limited. And the more I read of my mentor Machiavelli's work, the more I find that he thought the same thing. In fact, Machiavelli said in one of his writings that strategy is useful only 10% of the time, which, he said, is when God is sleeping. And so he often wrote about fortune and fate and chance. And the limits of strategy, so if I were to rewrite this book now, I would write about strategy in a less enthusiastic way, and maybe more about other ways to achieve success.
Wow. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
And Cherry will have a next question.
Yes.
Hello, Ms. Rubin. How are you?
And how are you? Who am I speaking to?
My name is Cheryl.
Hello.
Hello. My question is concerning the power of goodbye that you cover, you know, at the end of the book that you touch on. I was really thinking about, you know, when is it that one, I guess you could say, throws in the towel? What advice could you give to help the Princesa determine the best time to leave an organization? You know, when does one stop trying in pursuing what, you know, they want or what she would want?
Well, I'm going to turn this question around to you, but I'll answer very quickly, but I'd like to know what your experience has been. So one way that that I used as a guide was when another idea started to attract me so that I felt I could say goodbye to an organization or a situation because my imagination started to click in another mode and something else drew me to it. Then I felt really safe in saying goodbye, and I felt that that I had kind of a new world to conquer. But tell me, have you? You must have had an experience like this. How did you handle it?
Well, actually, I eventually arrived to that place that you've just described. But there was a catalyst and an impetus. You know, when things got a bit painful, that is. Psychologically painful, you know, to, you know, continue in the battle or in the struggle, and where I was just beginning to feel that I was not getting anywhere, you know, trying different approaches or, you know, some of these tactics, in fact, that you, you know, delineate in the book.
Yes.
And there's just really a point, I guess I would say in my spirit, when I knew that, And then really shifted in my thinking about other possibilities, other opportunities, other settings. So it's that kind of a process that I've had personally and experienced personally.
Yes, I think we're saying this something very similar, which is that yes, often. You find that you've just reached a dead end, and none of the strategies work. So better to save your energy and save yourself for the next battle.
Absolutely. On that, I certainly, certainly agree. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We have David now with one question. Victor Davis.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I read your book, and I was very intrigued by it as an African-American male, and I also recommended it to my niece, who is the vice president of J.P. Morgan Chase, in her, you know, career moves to read before she went any further. My question is, do you believe your book can be transcended to other minority groups as a guide to obtaining and keeping power?
Totally. Yes, because... I wrote this book as a woman working in book publishing, and most of my authors were CEOs or white men of a certain level of status and achievement, and they treated me as if I were, certainly not their equal, much, much less, and so I felt not just second class in that context, but third class or fourth class or classless, actually. And so that's the spirit in which I wrote the book, as somebody who needed to find a voice and needed to find status that I was not granted by the social order. Does that make sense? Am I making that?
Yeah, totally.
So I think the answer to your question is very much so, and I'm glad to hear that you, as an African American male, have found something of value in this book. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you. I appreciate you writing it.
You're welcome.
We have a diversity in this class, Miss Robin.
It's beautiful. What a beautiful chorus of voices.
Yeah, the funny thing, I was calling the princessa, and you call it the princess.
It doesn't matter.
It's always a princess. We have Riaz, that he will ask a question for you. Riaz.
Hello.
Yes. I'm Riaz. I am pleased to speak with you. My question is that... you mentioned that at the page number 105 in the Princessa, oppose power, do not fight it directly. How can I apply this strategy an educational leader?
I'm not sure I heard you clearly. Did you ask what is the relevance to leaders in education?
After this degree, I have to work as an education leader, and I have to oppose from the teacher union and bureaucracy.
Oh.
How can I tackle this problem? I have to oppose, but not directly.
Tell me a little bit about how you've handled the problems that you face or the conflicts that you face to date.
Yeah.
How can I handle this situation?
At the present time, I have learned about the conflict and I have different technique, but still I am learning, not I am in the practical field.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm very interested in what you're facing. Can you give me an example of a conflict that seems to have no solution?
Okay. You mean there is a conflict? Because in education system, at the present time, teacher union and bureaucracy, they create a lot of problem, especially in the female educations. And they use a lot of fund, and we could not provide education to the female, especially female.
And you couldn't provide education to females?
Properly. Actually, we want to provide education to female. We want to promote education in Pakistan female, but still there is a barrier.
Ah, okay. I see what you're saying. That's a very interesting problem and a very interesting challenge. I would imagine it's such